Isn't it good to graduate? Weren't you happy when you graduated? We can celebrate with all these graduates today. They're in a breakfast right now that our college ministry has prepared for them and spending some time together, and that's awesome, and we praise God for that. And you know, you may be thinking today, as we concentrate our attention on graduates for the day, you may think, you know what, this really is not going to have anything to do with me. This is really not going to have anything to do with me. But let me ask you a question. How many of you have graduated from anything? I mean, you know, high school, college, you know, two-week course with work. I mean, anybody graduated with anything? All right, here's what I want you to do. On the count of three, this is a participatory sermon, so you guys got to stay involved today, okay? And here's what I want you to do. On the count of three, I want you to yell out what year you graduated, okay? I've already got moaning going on. All right, here we go. Ready? One, two, three. Man, there was a whole lot of 19 and something. I won't go far back. But, you know, it's amazing how fast time goes by. And when you watch these pictures from when they were little babies to when they're graduating. I mean, I walked around in the dining hall today, and there were a lot of moms that were really, really upset today. They were already starting the tears because of the graduates. It's amazing how fast time goes. What I want to do today is talk a little bit to our graduates and really not just to those that are graduating, even those of us who are in the workplace, who are in the community. We can all learn something about how to live for Jesus outside the four walls of this church. You see, that's the hardest thing. The easiest thing is to come together as believers and gather with other believers and have a great time and enjoy our fellowship with one another, enjoy the encouragement we receive from one another. But then, you know, it's like a football huddle. We go, okay, one, two, three, break, and we're all out in the community, and now we've got to live for Jesus in a community and in a world that's not always living for Jesus. So how do we do that? Well, you know what? That whole thing really inspired me to put together this book called Don't Forget to Dream. And it's not about dreaming dreams. It's not about sitting. It's not about daydreaming during sermons or during lectures or anything else. It's really about living the life that God has for you. It's living a life that's shaped by the very heart of God, and that's the dream. In the middle of this, in this book, and this is just an acrostic. We talk about decision making. We talk about relationships. We talk about enthusiasm. Talk about aspirations, and then talk about mission. There's this idea. This whole idea, though, of relationships. And you know, relationships are powerful. In fact, they're some of the most powerful influences that we have in our lives. And, you know, one story in the Bible that's always intrigued me is a story recorded in Daniel chapter 1 with the whole story of Nebuchadnezzar from Babylon coming down during the reign of Jehoiakim in Judah and taking captive, sieging Judah and taking captive people. He actually took articles from the temple, worshiping the one true God, and placed them in the temple of his God. He brought people back to Babylon, and then he gave instructions to one of his leading men, Ashpenaz, and says, I want you to do this. I want you to go, and I want you to gather up some of the royal young men, and he gave this long list of requirements for them. They're to be handsome. They're to be smart. They're to look like they have an aptitude for learning and growing, and he said, you know what? I want you to train them, and for 3 years, I want you to train them, and I want you to get them ready to serve in my court, So that whole process was going to start. Well, among the number was a guy named Daniel. And then you know his three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And he gathered them together along with these four guys. And they had not only special instructions, special schools that they had to go to learn the ways of Babylon and the things that would please the king, but they also had a special diet. And Daniel and his three friends decided, you know what, we really do not, even though we're in a foreign land and they worship a foreign God, we do not want to give up on our God, and we don't want to worship like they worship. We don't want to live like they live. And so they went to the gentleman that was over them, and they said, you know what, we don't want to eat the food that the king provides. We would rather just have our vegetables and water. Now, that doesn't sound like a very enticing meal and for a very attractive meal, especially for young men. You know, if it doesn't include some powdered donuts and some chocolate chip cookies and a few other things, it just doesn't seem like it's right. But they just wanted vegetables and water, just like they were accustomed to. And they wanted to stay pure and holy, undefiled by this pagan culture. And, you know, God had smiled on them and even changed the heart of the leadership. And he gave them permission to eat what they wanted to eat. He said, you know what, we'll try this for 10 days. And after 10 days, if you guys are still looking okay and everything's still all right, you know, we'll see what happens. Well, after 10 days, after the test was up, you know what happened? They looked at him and they said, you know, these guys look better than the other guys. that we have in our group. I mean, these guys are healthier, stronger. I mean, everything is just so much better for them. And so they allowed them to do that. Well, you know, after 3 years, they went into service for the king. Now, you remember what happened. They were in this pagan culture and now trying to separate themselves and live a holy life pleasing to God in the middle of that culture. And their faith was going to be put to the test. You remember what happened? Daniel was in charge of one region, and his three friends were in charge of others. And we have the test of the fiery furnace. You remember that? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego wouldn't bow down and wouldn't worship the idol. And because of that, they got thrown into the fiery furnace. And God spared them. God saved them. One of the most amazing statements in that whole story is that they got thrown in this fiery furnace that was heated up just in an incredibly high temperature. And when they came out, they weren't singed. Their hair, you know, hair wasn't singed. And they didn't even smell like smoke. That just amazes me. It just amazes me how God protected them and honored them. And then Daniel was put to the test. You remember that? Daniel and the what? Lion's den. Daniel in the lion's den. And because he wouldn't bow down, and because he was faithful to bow down to his God and pray as he always had, he was thrown into the lion's den, and his faith was put to the test. Now, when you read that whole story, it is an awesome story of God's grace and God's mercy in the midst of a pagan culture when people are being faithful to him. But lost sometimes in that is this, that the positive influence of these friends, these are four guys that got taken out of their high school and put in some strange high school that worshiped some strange god, and they start, now they're in this strange environment, and they have to live for Jesus, and they positively influenced one another to live for Jesus, to live for God, and they were faithful to do that. But you know what? That's the kind of influence that we want our sons and daughters to have, isn't it? We want them to be surrounded with godly people who are going to influence them in the right way to follow Christ. But we know this, that doesn't always happen. And the reason is because we hunger for friendship. We hunger for friendship. And I understand that. See, when I was in high school, I'd grown up in Tallahassee, Florida. We lived there basically my whole life. And then after my ninth grade year, my father was transferred to Atlanta. And we moved before my 10th grade year to Atlanta. And we moved into an apartment, didn't know where we were going to live in Atlanta. And so I started going to a new school for the first time in my life. Because for me, as a young man growing up, every friendship just came natural because you grew up with these kids. I mean, you were toddlers with them, and then you were elementary students with them, then your middle school students with them, then your high school students with them. And so everybody's around you, and you just have this natural circle of friends. But all of a sudden, things were a little bit different. We moved from Tallahassee to Atlanta. We moved into an apartment. I didn't know anybody. You know, I tell people my best friend was the basketball, and that really was true. I'd go play basketball all day long, and that's where I spent time. Well, I got to know a few people in my ninth grade year, largely because of the fact that I played basketball, and so I had this common thing that I could identify with people with, and they could identify me with. But then, toward the end of my ninth grade year, 6 weeks before the end of the ninth grade year, or my 10th grade year, my parents found a house, and we moved. We moved again in my 10th grade year. We moved to Riverdale, and we moved into a house there, and so again, I was thrust into an environment where I didn't know anybody. My best friend was my basketball again, and I started trying to make some relationships. To be honest with you, they already had their friends, and it was 6 weeks till the school year got out, and so I really didn't make many friends. And so again, in the summertime, my best friend was the basketball, and I went to the court all the time. But when my 11th grade year started, I started this junior year in high school, And realized, hey, this is where we're going to live, and this is where I'm going to plant some roots. I started trying to make friends, and that hunger to make friends is just overwhelming in all of us. We don't like to live life in isolation. We like to have friends. And some of those friends we choose to make, and some of those friends just come to us. The amazing thing is this, how much friendship means to all of us. We all want them. We all want to make them. We all look for them, and we'll go to great extremes, even to change who we are, to help people accept us. Friends are just friends. I mean, we just want them. And, you know, to show you that, down through the ages, there have been a lot of songs written about friends. I mean, there's tons of them. And you can search the internet, and you can find all kinds of songs about friends, and we love to sing those songs about friends. But, you know, as I started searching, I thought, and you probably already got a song in your mind, don't you, about what song I'm going to talk about here. But there's one song that just kind of caught my attention, and you see if you can help me with it, okay? Go ahead and warm up your voice. Clear your throat, okay? About three of you did that, okay? I'm counting on you to sing. If I don't sing you singing, you join me on the stage, okay? How about that? All right, here we go. I'm gonna read the verse, and then we get to the chorus. You kind of help me out, okay? This is what it says. When you're down and troubled and you need a helping hand, and nothing, and here's the word, woa, nothing's going right. Close your eyes and think of me, and soon I'll be there to brighten up even your darkest nights. You just name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running. Oh, there we go. Oh, to see you again. How about it? Ready? Winter, spring, summer. That was a little rough there, but you know what? You guys did pretty good. Get yourself a round of applause. Now, you know, some of our teenagers are looking at going, what in the world are they singing? Because listen to this. That song, I looked it up. I was wondering about this song. This James Taylor song, You've Got a Friend. 1971, that song came out on an album called Mudslide Slim. How about that for a title of an album? Mudslide Slim. Some of you probably still got that in your collection at home. But I thought about that. Here's a song that's 36 years old, but we still know the words to it. And one of the reasons is because it's about friends. It's about friends. Friends are that important to us. Now, as we start looking at those relationships, whether you're graduating from high school or whether you're graduating from college or you're in the workplace, the people that are around you have an impact on your life. And in fact, let me just give you some verses to write down. 1 Corinthians 15:33. You've heard this said before, and you probably didn't even know that it came out of the Bible, but it basically says this, bad company corrupts good character. And you start talking to your kids about, you know, watch out with the group you hang with. And then sometimes as adults, we go do the exact opposite of that, trying to find friends, and we wonder, what really happened to me? What changed my life so much? And we don't understand the impact of this statement. Bad company corrupts good character. And it really does. It happens all the time. Another verse. And this just shows the two-sided effect of friends. Proverbs 13:20. This is a great verse to write down and put on your refrigerator at home. He who walks with the wise grows wise, but a companion of fools suffers harm. And so what he's telling us is, you know what, you run with wise people and you're going to grow wise. You run with foolish people and you're going to be foolish. I mean, that's just the way it works. That's the impact of friends on our lives. And here's one I really like. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 9 through 12, it says this, two are better than one because they have a good return from their work. If one falls down, his friend can help him up. But pity the man who falls and has no one to help him up. We know how that works, right? I've fallen and I can't get up. Also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. And so what he's saying is, you know what? There's a lot of benefits of having friends when you're a crowd of two. You know, you can have, you can make more money, you can earn more, you can work better, you can keep yourself and protect yourself together. And then I love the last line. He says this, a cord of three strands is not quickly broken. You know, we kind of do the thing, two's company and three's a crowd. But what he says in this passage is, you know, as we walked with the throng at the house of God. Did you hear what he said? The psalmist is talking about this. He says, you know what? He said, you're one of my closest friends. We've even gone to worship together. And yet you have become my enemy. You've been the one that's raised up against me. You've become my foe. And so we see the double-edged side of this. We see the side where a friend can be a blessing and can really inspire us. And then we've seen the side where a friend can really be a challenge to us and a struggle to us. What I've learned along the way is this, that with friendship, you know, when we start building relationships, what we're really doing is we're inviting people to what we call our in crowd, okay? Our in crowd. The crowd that really, really gets involved in our life. They're our in crowd. And everybody likes to be in the in crowd. Nobody wants to be in the out crowd. I mean, if you're in high school and you look at the high school annual, you'll see kids, they all want to be in the in crowd. And you see all the casual pictures that are going on, they want to be in the in crowd. They don't want to be the out crowd. The truth is, whatever your circle of friends are, whatever your relationships are, that really becomes your in crowd. And some things happen for you when that happens that you need to understand. And let me just give you this list. In fact, I think there's four levels of in. Okay, there's four levels of in. And just write these four words down and just kind of tuck them away. First, there's involvement. Involvement, okay? Involvement. That's just hanging out. I mean, you're just hanging out. There's just involvement. And do you know what? We think there's no harm in just hanging out. You know, I don't know how many times I've heard parents and students argue back and forth, "Dad, those really aren't my friends. We're just hanging out. I mean, we're just hanging out. I'm just hanging out with them. Why are you hanging out with them if they're really not your friends?" Well, because I want to be cool. I want to fit in. I want to be in the in crowd, and we're just hanging out. It's kind of like you've got three worlds here, and then all of a sudden, those worlds come together, and they start hanging out. Now, they're not really mixed together. They're not really all influencing each other in a lot of ways, but they're hanging out. They've become a group, right? The problem is it's hard to stop there, isn't it? It's hard to stop relationships at any point along this continuum. And any of these four words, it seems like it just takes us to the next level a little more naturally. For example, we move from involvement to influence. To influence. And that's when you're really hanging around. I mean, you're not just hanging out with them every once in a while. Now you're hanging around them. And what changes is this. It's just a very simple, subtle shift. Now, you know, you're not in control of the situation anymore. You're not just on the outside hanging out. Now you're hanging around them. Now you really become one of them. You're in the group. You're hanging around them. And that person now has influence on you. And what you start to see is this, and we see this all the time. In kids, it's pretty dramatic. Sometimes our kids want to start dressing different because they're hanging around somebody. And so they want to start dressing like them. And you know, the big thing today is there's all kinds of symbols of who you are, the symbols of individuality, whether it's tattoos or piercings or wearing black clothes or white clothes or, you know, having really bleached blonde hair or really black hair, you know, or, you know, whatever you can do to make yourself kind of like the group you're hanging out with. That's what you want to do, because now the group is now influencing your life. They really become a part of who you are, and you become a part of who they are. In fact, your company starts looking just like you. I mean, they just start looking just like you. You start looking just like them. Then the third level is this, intimacy. And intimacy is when you start hanging in with this group. I mean, you now want to be with them more than you want to be with other people. You're not just hanging out and you're not just hanging around. Now, this is who you are. You're in the in crowd. This is your in group. Now, when you let someone get to this level of influence in your life, I want you to know it starts changing not just the way you behave, but it starts changing the way you think. It starts changing the way you feel. And one of the clearest signs that you can know that somebody else is having this, you've allowed someone to have this level of connection with you, is when your attitude starts taking on their attitude toward things. Have you ever seen that happen? They may not be a bad attitude. It actually may be a good attitude about something that you have no interest in at all in your life before. But now all of a sudden, because of this group you're hanging out with and because of the intimacy that you share with them, now all of a sudden your attitude is just like theirs. And then you start seeing this. Your expressions, the things you say, the words you use start sounding just like them. You see, it's moving. It's moving to a greater and greater degree of impact. We've got just involvement and then just a little bit of influence, and now it's an intimate life. And then last, it's investment. It's investment. An investment is when you're hanging on. Investment is when you're allowing that person to have an influence in you to shape your life. Let me just show you this. And I'm not a magician at all, and this is not a magic trick. Actually, I'm a mad scientist, and this is a science project. And I talked to our science department. I said, you know, I want to show something. I want to show people, you know, what happens, just in visual illustration, so that you can see what happens when you allow this this four levels of involvement in your life, from involvement to influence to intimacy to investment. You know, when you start off and you allow people to be a part of your life, you start seeing these little drops or aspects of their character in yours. I mean, you just start seeing little signs that, you know what? My life's changing, and my friends are changing me. And you know what? We all say, hey, Mom, you know what? My friends aren't changing me. My friends aren't changing me. I'm changing them. And sometimes even as adults, we convince ourselves of that. We start hanging out with people who are not living for Jesus. And I want you to understand something. I'm not advocating isolationism here. I'm not advocating separation here. But I am advocating wisdom. Wisdom in who you choose as friends. Whether you're 18 years old or 38 years old, you need to watch who you're choosing as friends. Because I want you to know something. Our community is filled about 175,000 people today. If you were to go around door to door and interview every adult in this community and start talking to them about Jesus, you know what a lot of them would say? Oh yeah, I believe in Jesus. Oh yeah, I love Jesus. And at one time, I even served Jesus. But you know what? What happened? Because you're not at church today, you're at the lake. You're not at church today, you're at the ball game. You're not serving God in your life. You're living for yourself. What happened? Well, I got a new set of friends. And so we've got to be careful, don't we? Because at first, when you get those new friends, you start seeing the effects. And then we convince ourselves, you know what? I'm really okay. I really don't have a problem because my friends really aren't changing me. They're really not having an effect on me. But then through time and through the development of friendships, we start seeing something else. We start seeing that, you know what? I really feel like a mad scientist right now. They really do, because when you start looking at your heart and the way you live, you start seeing that your colors are changing. That things really are changing. That you're looking a little different. That's not as blue as I wanted it. So let me add another dash of that. And if this blows up, you know what? I'm going to see Jesus. All right? But you know what? When you start hanging around and you get in the middle of new friends, your colors start to change. You can't have friends without them having an effect on you. Now, the great thing is that it didn't just have to be that they have an effect on you. A great thing is that you can have an effect on them. You can have an effect on them. But to do that, boy, you've got to be ready. You say, how do I do that? Well, let me just give you real quickly, as we wrap up today, what should you do to make the friend thing the right thing? The first thing is this: you need to protect your heart. Proverbs 4:23 is one of those passages I memorized a long time ago. And it's because God just pointed out to me this: above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life. You see, you need to be careful who comes into your life and what you allow to influence your heart and the way you think, because you know what? Out of your heart, everything else in life comes. So you need to protect it. And if I were to give you some prep work, and let me just tell you this, you usually don't make the friends and get in the wrong crowd and then get things straightened out again. And so if I were to tell you how to get that right, how to make that right, then this is what I would tell you. There's some prep work to do. Number one, you need to make sure that you keep on praying, that your conversations and fellowship with God are intact, that you're spending time with God every day, that you're praying. Second thing, and I know this is what a lot of us don't want to hear, number one, is you need to read. You need to read. You need to read God's word. You need to stay in God's word. You need to listen to God's voice. And number three, you need to expose. You need to expose yourself and keep exposing yourself to people and situations where you can hear God's voice, where you can listen to Him. You know, I was growing up, my mom used to say to me, we'd come home from school and we live in a big neighborhood. We liked to play, and it was a safe environment, really safe environment. And so oftentimes her rule to me was this: all right, it's 3:30. Now until 5:30, You can play with any of the kids in the neighborhood, but just stay within the sound of my voice, okay? And what she meant was, you got all this freedom, you got all this stuff you can do, but don't go so far away from home that when I stand on the front porch and call your whole name, Timothy, Paul, Dowdy, come home, that you can't hear me. And you know what? The only times I got in trouble was when I got too far from home and I could not hear her voice. Now, I may not have been doing a horrible thing, but I was too far from home and I couldn't hear her voice. Now, I want to tell you something. When you're starting to prepare your heart and garden your heart for friendships and you're thinking, okay, what do I need to do? Well, you need to pray. You need to talk to God. You need to read. You need to let God talk to you. And you need to expose yourself to situations where you can hear God's voice. You don't need to run too far from home. Because just when you think you don't need it, you need to hear from God. And then the last thing is this, you need to pursue. You need to pursue your closest friendship as your friendship with God. You see, there's nothing that any of your friends, there's no way that your friends that are around you can give you what you need. Only God can provide that. And so with all of your heart, with all of your strength, pursue a friendship with God. And wasn't it neat when we just talked about Moses, but wasn't it neat when it summarized Moses' life, it says he was a friend of God. That's sweet. So my challenge is this. You know what? If you're gonna step out in the world and be strong, then live for Jesus out there. And if you're going to live for Jesus, you've got to guard your heart. If you're going to guard your heart, you need to pray, you need to read, you need to expose, and you need to pursue. And when you do, you'll have an effect on the world. And so the world having an effect on you. And friends can be a good thing. The right thing. So let's pray together. Let's all stand. Father, we love you today, and we thank you so much for your love and for your grace. We thank you for the joy of being able to get together and learn from your word, even about friendships, even about relationships. Lord, the biggest thought in all of this is that our greatest friend is you. Lord, I pray that you'd help us to stay committed to that, to pursue you with